Continuation of where I left off some time ago on a little book here that I'm not pushing it or anything, but some years ago I wrote this little monograph on critters of Holden or the creatures around Holden, and I never enjoyed doing something so much as that thing, and this isn't conceit, but once in a while I find it somewhere in the house and I'll read it and I'll laugh and laugh and laugh and say, boy, what a liar you are. But as a joke book, I kind of enjoy it. This world that we live in is just filled with such fascinating things. And the creation that we have, I'm afraid that so many of us, we ignore it in preference to that boob tube. That's tragic. That is just tragic. We have a television at home, only we belong in the dark ages. It's a black and white set. Pardon?
We have a black and white.
Well, you're in the same league with me. We look at that thing only Sunday nights now, at 60 minutes, and I get so mad after I see that I threaten to throw the thing up. Well, I do look at a few ball games.
With discrimination, you can get a university education over that tube.
That's if you pay for cable, right?
No, if you select with discernment. I look at only some programs, and since the Lord made the world in many colors, I like the colors.
Well, you live in a bigger area. I'll bet you have a selectivity there.
Oh, we do, yes.
Now, we have just a couple little channels, and it's not too interesting. But there are some good things about it, too, but my, how much time we waste in it.
Will you tell us this morning when you're lying and when you're telling the truth?
When my neck swells, then that's a big lie. And when my ear flaps, that's just a little white lie. But when you read the first chapter of Genesis on the creation, and the second chapter has a little more about it, it's a different account, but it isn't too specific about the animals that we have, and that's in verse 24. And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creatures after his kind, cattle and creeping things and beast of the earth after his kind. It was so, and God saw that it was good. That's all it says about that. And there must have been a variation among all of the biological life after the fall, after the third chapter. Because we do know that some animals live in a symbiotic relationship. They must have the cooperation of something else. Did I tell about the hawk, the sphinx moth, or the hawk wasp that lives on tarantulas? Did you hear that one? Okay, this hawk wasp, and it's about this big, will find only a tarantula nest, and that's that big hairy spider. Who's seen one of those? They used to come in the banana bunches from South America, but we have them in California. And this spider is in his den, and this wasp goes down the den, and they have a battle. And sometimes the wasp loses, but very often, most frequently, the wasp will give the tarantula a hypodermic sting and knock him out, and then lay her eggs all over this body. And these eggs hatch in a day or so, and they first of all have to have living meat. And they start eating on the tarantula, and of course when they get to a vital organ, the tarantula is dead. Then these larvae will have rotten meat, because it's dead. And by the time they consume this tarantula, why then they're all ready to pupate and go into the moss, or to the wasp stage, or a hollow. That takes some time. Now, this wasp can only live by the death of the tarantula. This must have happened after the fall, because death was not known. Kind of an interesting thing. There are many, many relationships there. When we talk about creeping things in the animals, here's an interesting thing. The total insect species in the world so far are 680,000. Mm-hmm. Now you know why you slap mosquitoes and have moths in your lights in the evening. That's insects. By the way, this book I brought some years ago here and left at Holden Village, and I spent quite a bit of time looking for it. They put it up in Ginny's corner up there. I'm going to be an Indian giver, and I'm going to take this home. This is a fantastic book for children. But you must be able to explain it. Uh, Chrissy Sue's brother. How old is Jeff? 4. Once a week he must come into the chalet, and I've got to read him about the bugs. And he says, don't start in the middle. Start in the front. And I have some grandchildren now, and so I'm stealing it out of this here and taking it home. I don't know if it's in published, in print or not. The total animals of the world, remember, 750,000 insects. The total animals of the world, other than insects, are only 250,000 species. That's one third of the bugs. And the total plants of the world are 250,000 species, a little more than animals. Beetles, there are 250,000 beetles, and they're finding new ones all the time. And if you were to take the bugs and pile them over here and weigh them, and take all the animals and pile over here and weigh them, which would weigh the most?
Bugs.
I have a lecture on bugs that we should do sometime. Well, let's see where we stopped. I guess we stopped on birds. Let's go and the next animal that is perhaps the very interesting animal and very common here, the beaver. Do you know that you are sitting about 50 feet from a beaver dam? Anybody know that? I don't think anyone knows that.
Heard you say it before.
Where is it?
It's right over here. It's real brushy. There used to be one a little closer, 40 feet. But it's went about 10 feet over, and it's a mucky, crummy, old, oily water in there. And just imagine, you're that close to one of the most interesting critters in the whole United States, no, in North America. Do you know that the beaver made this country? How many places do you know from coast to coast that are called Beaver Dam, Beaver Falls, Beaver Flats, Beaver, what's that one in Oregon? Coast to coast.
Beaverton.
Yeah, all kinds of beaver things. Now let's go beyond the Hudson Bay Company, which is over 400 years old. And it was formally organized under the King of England because of beaver pelt 400 years ago. I forget the exact date, I think it's 1670 or 72. These little creatures dammed up streams for centuries and centuries. And these little dams caught all of the alluvial soil in the floodplain and made a prairie. And centuries go by, and you have a verdant piece of flat land. They were the Army Corps of Engineers. And the Army Corps of Engineers is a bunch of pikers compared to my friends the beavers. And there is no federal appropriation or anything for these little silent animals. The other year, some years ago, I was at that Teton Dam in, near Idaho Falls. Have you seen it? That's the Army Corps of Engineers. Oh, when I looked at that, I told my son-in-law, I says, what a boo-boo we're looking at. Man, what a boo-boo that was. Beaver don't do that. The beaver is the only animal that creates its own environment. So it built a dam. They don't know whether they build the lodge first or the dam first. The largest dam is in New Hampshire. I think it's 3/4 mile long. I was in a beaver dam in near Wyoming in the Idaho border once where it was so wide and broad that the range cattle walked over the thing. It must have been as wide as this fireplace. And they do it without tools. They don't have to have the big Morrison Construction Company with the turnip poles or anything like that. But they do it just with the tools that God had given them. And this is a remarkable thing. Have you ever watched an oriole build that nest in the Midwest? I don't think you have. You ladies are good with needles and that stuff, aren't you? I want you to use your needles and make an oriole's nest sometime. Out of the material that this bird does with just a pair of mandibles and wings and makes that lovely hanging basket. Or the vireo's nest, another little hanging basket. For a purpose, for the nurturing and the rearing of their offspring. And I go from coast to coast very often and look at homes that people build. Let's call them nests. Very often they're nothing but a way stop between the garage and something to eat. And how many of these homes have you seen with a for sale sign on because the male and the female split up? No bird does that. Don't ever call anybody a dumb brute beast. We have much to learn. Soon we'll see the Canadian geese come by, and I don't like people who shoot them, but I guess they do. They mate for life, dumb bird. What a remarkable attribute that man could look at who is plagued by sin. That word is sadly neglected today.
Is it true that if a Canadian goose is shot, that the mate will stop at that place every year, flying south and north?
Oh, I don't know about that, but they have been noted to stay there and lament like mad. Then some birds are not as sensitive as that. I remember watching a wren in Nebraska where the young were just eating up, and she made a great deal of fuss, and 10 minutes later she went. And you can take some of our perching birds and shoot the male, and the female will have a male in about, that is during breeding season, in a couple of hours. Shoot him and she'll get another one. That instinct, that urge drives them on. Well, a little more about the beaver. He creates his own environment. The dam is there for several reasons, protection and for refrigeration or food supply. And the protection is they are great swimmers. They can swim underwater 15 minutes. They can come up from after being underwater. I want you to hold your breath a minute. Your face will get pretty red, won't it? Most of them puffing like that. The beaver, in one gulp, after 15 minutes of being submerged, can replenish the oxygen supply in his blood with just one breath. The adaptability, the variation of this tremendous creation that we're in. I think sometime we should have a doctor lecture to us to tell us what makes us tick in layman's language. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Mm-hmm. In layman's language. And the beaver also has an interesting thing. They have a second lip in back of their teeth so they can chew underwater, and they're nothing more than animals that live on the bark of deciduous trees. Particularly, they love the aspen, quaking aspens, and the poplar, and the birch, and the alder, and willows. And I can take you down here in Ten Mile Creek and show you some cottonwood trees like these great biggie ones here, where they're completely girdled about that deep, where the beaver have been sitting and chewing. And you say, my goodness me, what in the world? Does he want to cut that big old tree down? No, he's sharpening his teeth. And the calcium there is just chisel sharp, the four that they have in the front there. And I've seen beaver chips, I'm sure, 5 inches long. This whole valley is filled with them, but we have a problem of overpopulation and food supply. And I can take you down to Wilson Creek on this side of Railroad Creek and show you where they've cut down lodgepole pine. I've never read where they've cut down a conifer tree. And there's another place where they cut down a western red cedar even. So it's just a matter of starving. It's about comparable to me being forced to eat cheese. And that's really going some, you know. It's a problem of food supply. A beaver is in a family called Castoridae, and the castor oil that they secrete, the trappers will use and put over traps, and it is the same thing as a wolf who urinates over his various trees and rocks of his hunting area, and all other wolves know that this belongs to Mr. Jones over here, we stay away. And the beaver can secrete some of this castorum oil, and they know who went there, male or female, when they went, or where they went, and how long ago. Just like leaving a calling card and writing down things. The other day, the lady who watches over our house in California sent a note that someone had dropped in our mail slot. And it starts out like this: Ernst. My name is Ernest. But that's in German. I knew you in 1917 when you had hair clear down to your shoulders. Guess who? I'm on my way to Reading to see my grandchildren. I'll stop on the way back. The nut never even put his name down. And I don't think I had hair in 1917. I think they cut it off in 1914. But I don't know. I had long, beautiful, silky hair. This has nothing to do with beaver. And grandmother could tell when the weather was going to change because my curls would get curlier. So I should have been a meteorologist or something. But anyway, the beaver don't need to do that, leave notes. They can do it just with this castorum oil. They never stop growing. The largest beaver was trapped in Tomahawk, Wisconsin about 1917 that weighed as much as a St. Bernard dog, 130 pounds. And it's a relic of the prehistoric days of that largest rodent that ever lived. It's in that same family, and I think they were monstrous things, about 18 times the size of a pig. And rodents, there is one rodent in South America. What's the name of that fellow that lives in the water? It's related into that particular family. A beaver will have the nose not in the front but in the side so they can dive. They have lids over their eyes so they can do a lot of diving. They have a long flat tail which is not used to act as a barge. There's oh so much folklore, you know, that is foolish, like the hoop snake that'll grab its tail and make a hoop and roll down the mountain. But a beaver uses a trail as a seat, what he chews. And the best thing for it is to slap the water in case of alarm. How many have ever heard beaver watch them? It's not many of us get a chance to do that, and that's a terribly interesting thing. They're nocturnal. You'll have to go in the evening, and we have the discipline here of going to Vespers, so I don't think you can do it here at Holden Village. You got to do it somewhere else. It's an interesting thing about some of the funny things that happened about the beaver. Here's a good one here. Since he was a swimmer and possessed a broad, flat, fish-like tail apparently covered with scales, it could thus become a good Lenten substitute, that is, the hindquarters. Clairvaux, a Jesuit, wrote in 1754, "Due to its tail, it is entirely fish and has been legally certified as such by the medical faculty of Paris, following which declaration the theological faculty has decided that its flesh might be eaten on fast days." You get the implication here of fish, no fish on Friday and fast days, yeah. The Catholic Church. But because this fellow swam and had scales in the tail, why, it's fish. This is that strange Roman Catholic reasoning that we have. I might bring another one later on out. Then there are so much falsehoods about things that, here's a rather interesting one. Outside of Wiesbaden in Germany is a little village called Biberich, and these towns all have coats of arms, and this village has on its coat of arms a beaver with a fish in his mouth. And they thought that they ate fish. And this is an entirely misnomer, and it even goes to the fact, to the point of conviction, where they put it on the coat of arms of a city that lasts for generations and generations. The beaver became almost extinct in Europe because of superstition. Living in water, the beaver oil or fat was good for rheumatism. Mm-hmm. You'd be amazed how many animals have seen their demise in this world because of the superstition of men. It can cure disease, longevity, love potions. You'd be surprised what the Chinese will spend money on to get rare animals, you know, the horns of various animals all over the world. And the beaver certainly was hounded because of some of these reasons. Hudson Bay Company. How many own a Hudson Bay blanket? How many stripes on your blanket?
Three.
Three? You got three? You got a four-striper. Oh, I'm going to talk to you. What do those stripes mean?
It's worth four beaver pelt.
It was worth four beaver pelt. Did you know that?
Now
you've learned something. Hang on to that blanket. It's a good thing. But they were traded for beaver pelt. And ladies, there was a fashion 400 and some years ago in Europe that men should wear beaver hats or felt hats, and they were called beaver. And I think that was a kind of a stupid fad. You know, we look at the women about fads that they have, long high heels and things like that, but the men are just as guilty, and these things, some of them would weigh that tall, didn't they? And in fact, the King of England made a royal decree that this should be the fashionable headgear for men. And the Hudson Bay Company was formed and started out in Canada. And of course, to get the beaver pelt, they had to have the voyagers. And if you're interested in the boundary waters of America and Lake Superior there, it's just a fascinating thing to read. And here again, as a skeptic of history, why, I divide by my social security number. How many have seen that movie they have in Ely, Minnesota, where they have reenacted the voyagers who went in the spring with all the supplies and the trading gear for the beaver pelt and then came back? None of you seen that? I saw it last summer, and I was just amazed how people would believe some of these things in here.
What was the name of that?
The Voyager. Pardon?
The Voyager.
Yeah, the Voyager. They've created a new national park, the Voyagers National Park now.
But
if you ever get to Ely, Minnesota, take a look at that. These guys could pick up 300-pound pack and run on a portage. In my prime, if I had 60 pounds, I'd just barely crawled, you know, and I don't think I'm a weakling or anything like that. And they'd live on pea soup, and every once in a while they stop out and have a smoke, so a lake with so many pipe smokes away and everything. And they didn't last very long, and they were all French-Canadian, short, wiry people, and I think a lot of our like the Wild West stories of the cowboys, you know, my, what a bunch of malarkey that is. The guy comes out, "Draw, you buzzard," most of them shot each other in the back.
Mm-hmm. They have statues of men up there, I can't remember what they call them.
A statue?
Yeah, up there, going
must be Paul Bunyan.
Paul
isn't it?
Bunyan,
yeah.
And he's as tall as the building.
Yeah, I like Paul Bunyan because it's just a big black lie.
Yeah.
but it's a real interesting lie. I like Paul Bunyan. I read him all the time. Well, anyway, the beaver men, they were the fellows who led the Oregonians out west here. They were the fellows who were able to get the 49ers to go to California. They're the only fellows who knew the way out here. If it would have been for them, or those people who had some awful time crossing this remarkable virgin country of ours, I have high admiration for those people. Tremendous. Well, the problem that we have here is food supply. And some time ago, I went with my son-in-law in a 8,000-foot sagebrush area where elk roam, in right near Idaho and Wyoming border. And he took me up a draw where there was a stream. I'm sure the amount of water flowing, it couldn't have been the equal of two hoses. If you open up two hoses from the faucet bib, you know, that's about how much water was flowing in this stream. And it was a kind of a sharp canyon, and I think there must have been 8 or 9, 10 dams and ponds built by these beavers. It was all loaded with aspen forest, you know, that beautiful blondish bark, and the petioles or the leaf stems are flat and the leaves shake, you know, that heart-shaped leaf. And it has it must be a wonderful food for the beaver. And you could see where they logged. A beaver cannot fall a tree the way he wants it to go. He stands around there, and the worst insult you can give a lumberjack when he's using an axe and it looks terrible, like a Boy Scout been hacking away or a maverick from Holden Village, why you say, "Huh, looks as though beaver been around here." That's the worst insult you could give him. If you can't make your axe cut just perfect, you know, like slicing butter with a knife, boy, you're no good. But a beaver works around it, you know, and he keeps his eye open, and as it goes, he just scampers away to safety. And generally they say they can fall them towards a stream. Well, most of them lean towards a stream, so it's just pure chance. Then if you go up to Heart Lake, up in the other end of Heart Lake, you can see a beaver canal about a block long that they have taken out of the meadow, and they put their sticks and things, and toot, 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 they barge them down to Heart Lake, to near where their lodge is. Go to the Museum of Natural History in the University of Minnesota, and there they have an excellent cross-section of a beaver lodge. The water comes so far, and then they have a tunnel under the water, and up in here it's dry, and it's just a beautiful little place, and they have another exit on the other side where the young are born. One time on a canoe trip in Canada, When you go in the woods, when you go on a canoe trip, open your eyes, listen to things, and enjoy it. And we'd always go in hard 3 days worth, make a camp, and then explore and everything. And one evening we saw a beaver lodge in a granite cleft in the lake. Now, they have no business of building dams up in Canada, in northern Minnesota. They've got millions of lakes. They're already there. But they're so industrious, the rascals got to dam the outlet of some of these lakes. There's no need for it. But they have a job in building their lodge. They got to go into some granite cleft of the rock, and they'll pile all of these deciduous trees or branches from which they had eaten the bark. Then we drifted the canoe in there, and they were talking. And if I only knew beaver language. It sounded as though the mother was scolding the guy for coming home with a drunk on again. Oh, it was a yak in there, and it was a treat. It was a calm evening, you know, and we just were ignorant on namely what they discussed. The young are born, and they're taken care of very adequately by the parents. The food supply is there, and in the Midwest, where you have 40 below zero, all that food is in the bottom of the pond. And they're somehow able to get these branches to stick in the bottom and not float up. They'd have to, wouldn't they? And then all winter long here, they can eat. Here we have an open winter, and they'll come out of the ponds. And about 7 years ago, we were here 6 weeks in the wintertime and skied up here past the ballpark. And here in this deep, deep snow, there's a tree that's cut off. It's about 7 feet. The stump is high. And every time I go by there, I ask people, how'd the beaver get up there? They use a step ladder, and then some perceptive person will say, well, they stood on the snow, on top of the snow, which they did. And there's where we found the long slivers, and they had all kinds of these cottonwood trees laying across the trail, and it was just a delight to see it. And they could bring these things in the cold winter time because the pond wouldn't freeze over. This place in Wyoming, the upper dam, they logged the aspen grove about a half a block from their dam. Apparently this was the limit of safety that they had. And they just didn't feel comfortable to be way up there away from their water so they could find protection in there. Then when the young are ready to go out, they're kicked out of the site, of the area. And if they don't move, the parents kill them. It's a matter of survival. Nature is harsh. That's the last resort. And if you people are so gung-ho on overpopulation, why, you better practice infanticide or something like that, which mankind has in the past. But the animals will do that. And one time a beaver was in North Dakota, was banded, and they found this young beaver 170 miles away. So they can travel quite a bit. Well, so much for our friend the beaver. I would like to have a little more emphasis placed on this animal, and we should perhaps have some kind of a national holiday called Beaver Day, because of what they have done to this country. And thank goodness the beaver hats are blasé, they're no longer in style, and the beaver have made remarkable comebacks, and many ranchers will curse them soundly because of the damage that they do, and the conservation department decides to move them and trap them and things like that, and I hope they take good care of my friend. The next little fellow I want to talk about is one that you've never seen, or maybe you've never heard about him, and that's called a mountain beaver, or a boomer. Anybody hear that? I never knew he existed until about 8 years ago. Werner raced into where we were living and said, he used to have a great big mentally retarded St. Bernard dog called Bernie. Do you remember him, some of you? The dumbest beast I ever laid eyes on. They used to have to tie him up. People go up to Holden Lake, why, Bernie, take right off. Every crick that comes along, Bernie, jump in, you know, and cool off. You know, dogs have no, they can't perspire. They do it out of their mouth and their tongue. And Bernie was slobbering all the time. All that meat, you know, trying to cool off. And then she'd shake, and all the people get a free bath, and then she'd grab a stick of wood about that thick in her mouth and run down the trail, knock everybody off the trail, and once she ate all the people's lunch when they got up to Holden Lake. Just a delightful dog. Well, this evening she had an animal in her big old puss, and hadn't her harmed it, and Werner wanted to know, came in and got me and wanted to know what it was. And so we put the flashlight right in back of the jacuzzi. We put the flashlight on him, and I'd never seen this thing before. It looked like a kitty, little cat ears, and a naked little tail, and a round body, something like a beaver. And I knew it was something strange, and I says, keep the light on him, he wouldn't move. And Bernie, we got rid of, I don't know how he did that. But anyway, I raced in, got my flash attachment, and came back out, and Werner for a moment moved the light, and this fella beat it. And so I got my book of mammals out, and I traced them to a mountain beaver, or a boomer, not related to the beaver family at all. And I saw one more, a young one, up towards the mine some years ago. And some of the kids have come from Holden Lake and claimed they saw one on the trail and could pet him. And before you get to Holden Creek on the trail to Heart Lake, you'll see three or four dens of these fellows. And up the switchbacks in Holden Lake, there are a few of their dens. And I saw them just the day before yesterday. Not the animal, but where they live. It's nocturnal. It has big whiskers, apparently, to feel in tunnels and at night and things like that. It does eat insects and also does eat bark. And not a dangerous animal. It makes a peculiar noise in Northern California. They call it a booming noise, so that's where they have the word boomer. You'll never see a mountain beaver, so, but we've got them here. I'd like to just call your attention to them. I haven't mentioned anything about the weasels or the mink or ermine or marten. This apparently is a marten country, and marten are the animals that will race up in trees and eat squirrels and things like that. And that winter I was here, we saw one on the porch of Koinonia going down into the basement. It had a bad leg, a gimpy leg. It was quite an interesting animal. Sid, who is down at Lucerne, who spends the winter there, traps marten. And last winter he trapped beaver and got about five of them, I believe. And he does it very well. He's very selective. How he can do that, I don't know, but he's quite a conservationist. These animals must be harvested. We have seen fit to get rid of all of the predators, and that's tragic. The last animal is my favorite, namely the marmot. He lives up in the high country up here. Who's seen a marmot? I'm sure many of you have. They whistle very shrill and sharp. They do it with their mouth wide open. I have a telephoto picture of one whistling. Mouth is wide open, so apparently the larynx does the whistling the same way with birds. Boy, birds have no voice box. That is all done with the larynx. And the marten is interesting for several reasons. He is a true hibernator. The bear kind of snoozes a little bit, but the marten will sleep, or the marmot will sleep as much as 8 months, I suppose. I mean sleep. You can take a double-barreled shotgun and shoot it right beside his ears and he won't even twitch. His temperature drops 50%. His metabolism goes way, way down. Scarcely susceptible breath once a minute. And in all this time of total being totally unconscious, if he were to be fasting in his normal waking state, he would lose just in 2 weeks all that he loses in all this long time under that deep snow in the high country. The medical profession would give anything to be able to do that to the human body for operative purposes. And they're studying them. And I thought maybe I could get a grant from the government, a couple of million, and live up there and study them, but the government won't help me at all. There is no bodily function whatsoever, no secretion. And I store some of my things in a certain place, and a certain place back over here. up in the higher country, and every time I find these things in late July, why, the pika, apparently, or some other rodent is in there, and you ought to see all of the droppings, the scat that these animals leave, and there's a certain peculiar smell, but the marmot does none of that at all. And then when they come out, why, I have yet to see one eat. Although Dale Hirsch has got some excellent pictures of some on Cloudy Pass back here, he has one picture of a blade of grass sticking out of one marmot's face. But if I were a marmot, I'd eat 24 hours a day and fatten up. But all the marmots I've watched, they're just chubby, and they just sit there and play and dream and sun themselves. And this summer I saw one cross a snowfield. That's the only time I saw one move very quickly, because there was a possibility a predator could swoop down on him, and man, did he scoot across that snowfield. On this same place up here, I had one that lived right behind where I generally set up my camp. I don't know how many times I've been up there in the many years, but I called her Josephine. And the last time I saw her, or the last summer I saw her, she had two young ones. Obviously, when they breed in the summer when the anemones are blooming, and that's in July and August, but the young are born much, much, much later. They can't be born in the den when all their biological functions have ceased practically. They must be born after they emerge. So that must be called delayed implantation, such as the seal that go clear up to the Aleutian Straits to calf. And before they drop the baby seal, they are bred by the bulls. Did you know that? That's delayed implantation. And then, of course, gestation starts way back down when they get way down south again. And so this is what this animal must have adapted itself in doing. And this particular animal, Josephine, 2 weeks after I saw her for the last time, we had some helicopter people from Fort Lewis who were in a air rescue mission. They had been reconnoitering around this country, and they'd looked at topographic maps, and they saw these three remote lakes back over here. And they'd got permission from the Forest Service to land a party up there and camp. And the Forest Service agreed if they would take two portable toilets up there and set them up. Oh, sure, sure, sure. So I happened to be there when they were up there. Well, I was a little nosy, I'll have to say that. And when they left, we were there the day they left. I just prayed to the good Lord, let an overcast come, let a storm come up for 5 weeks so that these gung-ho he-men have to walk out. But no, the overcast lifted, and they talked walkie-talkie, and they poop-poop-poop all the way from Fort Lewis. You taxpayers, get in your pocketbook. And they picked up these guys, and then we did some reconnoitering. I picked up two boxes of empty 22 shells. I never saw Josephine again, or the two baby marmots. I looked all over in the rock talus and tried to smell if she had been decaying and rotting. We came out with a lot of other litter, and I was all set to write to the commanding officer of Fort Lewis, the Pentagon, the President, the Sierra Club, the Friends of the Earth, the Forest Service. But I says, why create any more stinks? But if they ever come back, I am writing. This is the thing, the burden of this whole society that we have, an appreciation of God's critters, even a marmot. And I like St. Francis when he says, all creatures of our God and King. And that includes the critters that hop and chirp and whistle and irritate you at times. It's a marvelous creation. Let me just conclude with something that I'd like to read out of this dumb book. But one fall, we were in San Francisco, and Pearl wanted to go to the shopping area on 19th Avenue, where Macy's store is. I don't know why you women are so attracted to these dives. I guess we men kind of hate it because when that charger plate comes in, we have to cough up or something. And she said, I just want an hour. And I said, okay, I'll go to Golden Gate Park. And I'll go to the Arboretum. We used to live 15 miles from San Francisco for 10 years. And periodically, with the children, we would work one part of Golden Gate Park. Spend a half a day there. Who knows the Golden Gate Park? That's a marvelous place. That's just to go to one place. And if you go to the Museum of Natural History, just go to one of the buildings. Then try the next one next time. And the aquarium and the planetarium. And I never got to the Arboretum in 10 years. Oh boy, now I got a chance. So I raced to the Arboretum. And I went through just like a hound dog on the trail of some bird hunting. And pretty soon I came to one place where there were some small juniper trees from all over the world, and a covey of quail were walking in there. You know, we got quail walking on golf courses and everything else in San Francisco. And I was watching them, the fellows with a little feather in their head. And here's a man with a newspaper on his arm, and he kind of sidled over to me, and we start talking about the quail. And then we start talking about some of the plants in there and the junipers. And he said, I'll take you to the Garden of the Blind. And we went to the Garden of the Blind, where there is a raised wall like this. And all of the plants were fragrant and braille, so a blind person could read and smell. Then we went to a crabapple orchard. Imagine that. From all over the world. Then we went to several other places. And it got to be really sticky between us. And he was eating a little capsule. He had heart condition. And he says, my wife wants me to back in the apartment at 12. And I says, my wife wants me back at the shopping center. And he gave me his calling card, and I didn't have any. He was a Jew. I was a German. He was a PhD in perfume research in Paris and then in Chicago, and then came out to the coast to retire. I'd just been a Lutheran pastor. But an affinity had been built up between us with such a diverse and opposite background that I thought that I would just write something like this. I could have met that man 1,000 times in the streets of San Francisco and have never known him. I sincerely believe that the immersion in the world of trees, flowers, and wild creation need to nourish human attributes now that is in short supply. And these attributes, awe, compassion, reflection, the brotherhood we often talk about but rarely practice except on a superficial level. It is a beautiful creation. And I think we should sing Te Deum's praise to God more and more and more. I won't even mention pollution or anything. Let's just look at the positive and enjoy it. Well, if you have some questions, I may not be able to answer them. I might.
I thought you would talk about the chipmunks because you're so...
We did the chipmunks last time.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm. I've got something on chipmunks in here. Yeah. I don't have anything on bears in here.
Mm-hmm. Just one little bird. I've seen a little bird around the peninsula. Is there a specific bird that's around?
Birds?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have too many birds. I can take you over to Glacier Park or Northern Idaho and show you twice as many birds as we have here.
Right.
No one can explain it to me. Talk about a transition zone. That's foolish. Birds got wings. They can fly. But over here you got a wet coast, and over the other side of the lake you got a semi-arid area. But birds can surmount these obstacles very easily. Whether it is a habitat or the snow or the winter or temperature, I don't know. But the other day I saw, going to Heart Lake, I saw a pair of golden-crowned sparrows, and they're not here. They got blown in, maybe. And a buried thrush, which is on the other side, never over here. Leo Bustard has seen one here, so I've seen one too now. So we don't have too many birds in here. And
seems to be a robin over near the hospital.
We have robins all around here, quite a few of them. In fact, we had one that had a nest right in the window here of one of the rooms, and some girls were living in there, and they'd report every day to me the progress.
Is it a smaller robin?
Smaller robin?
Uh-huh.
It's a West Coast robin, about the same as the one in the East. There is a little variation to them.
Are the goldfinches around here right now?
Goldfinches?
Yeah.
By the black and yellow one?
Yeah.
The fellow that flies like that?
I've only seen that at this
who eats sunflower seeds?
It looks like the flight of a goldfinch.
They're only in the Midwest.
What kind of snake?
That is a black-winged goldfinch.
I couldn't tell.
It flies like that. But we do have a warbler, a yellow one. And the yellow warbler is very predominant, right in our, that's our most predominant bird in the area. You
here?
Just see little balls of gold in the trees.
Okay, here, now?
Yes.
Okay, that must
yeah.
have been it.
Yeah. But you have problems now, you've got the fall colors. And then you have the juvenile plumage, and you just go out of your mind trying to differentiate once in a while.
What kind of, do you have a common adder snake here?
We have no snakes. I know nothing about snakes. We have no poisonous reptiles, except Domke Lake has rattlesnakes, and there, I think a rattlesnake is a gentleman.
We were walking up the path.
What you saw was maybe a rubber snake, a boa snake.
Well, it was like about the size of a garter snake.
Yeah.
Long,
you didn't pick it up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you should have picked it up. It would be rubbery. How come you don't like snakes? How many like snakes? One. Boy, that's a big average.
I had a big bullsnake.
I had a boy in my parish in a Sunday school near San Francisco, and he'd come early every Sunday morning and knew I was there early, and we'd talk snakes. And one day he asked me, do you think my parents would mind if I got a boa constrictor? And I said, no, go ahead. I don't know how many snakes he had. He just loved them. A snake is a beautiful animal. They're not slimy. That tongue comes out like this. It's a thermostat. They can hardly see. They see you by the temperature of your body on that little tongue. Look at them swim. Poetry in motion. That animal, Satan crawled into.
You think it looked like that at that time?
I doubt it.
I do too.
Because a curse was unto thy belly shalt thou crawl.
Yeah.
And the curse was pretty strong because few people like him. It's a beautiful animal.
You mentioned tarantula a while ago about the
yeah,
the
hawk was.
I never owned one, but I have a friend that owns tarantulas as pets. And they make very good pets.
I suppose.
He showed them to me, you know, and he said, would you like to hold it? And I said, no, thank you. But he would put his hand down in his case, and the tarantula would crawl up and come across and cuddle up into his neck.
Oh, you've read of prisoners having spiders as pets, you know, and that.
I heard of, but I didn't realize that they were so delicate. He was on his knees one day, and the tarantula was on his shoulder. And the cat came through into the room and scared the tarantula, and the tarantula jumped. And, you know, I thought the tarantula would be strong, and it lit on its legs, but the leg gave in, and it lit on its part of its body, and it broke the blood vessels inside and died.
Well, I was wondering.
They're very delicate.
Very delicate.
When I was in biology, we had tarantulas as pets in the class, and we were told to be real careful because their legs would break easily.
Uh-huh.
And supposedly, what is it with them? With broken legs, they're real apt to die real easily because their legs are real tender or something.
Yeah, they're delicate.
I heard a guy on the news the other day, and he said they found that giant spiders taste like peanut butter.
Oh!
I think that I would like to have an ant.
Giant spiders.
Ant and day family. Spiders and ant.
The sensitivity of animals must be much less than humans. You never hear them crying, you know, with pain, except the domesticated animals, man. But the wild animals just retreat somewhere. We should hear screaming and howling in the forest all the time, but you don't. And apparently insects the same way. Maybe this is part of the creation that God has put in there. I don't know. You think there'll be animals in heaven?
I hope so.
No.
Yeah.
C.S. Lewis has got this idea, you know. I kind of think so.
New heaven and a new earth. What does that mean?
Yeah. Quite likely they won't be. But I kind of think dogs should have a place in heaven. The dog is the only animal that caters to man's needs, a fellow who brings your slippers and wets your carpet and barks at the mailman and eats out of a tin can or anything. Well, I tell you one thing, if they ever push that button and everything gets to be hopeless here, man will only have his dog by his side. Have a nice animal.
I had a friend who was a theological professor, lived on our street. He raised some beautiful flowers. He's a poetic fellow. He said if there weren't flowers in heaven, he'd surely be disappointed.
Can't have flowers without the insects.
Yeah.
That's a very good
point. Well, we'll just conclude on this particular note. Yeah. If this world is so sin-cursed and floundering as it is, and yet has such beauty in it, and such interesting things in the whole variation of creation, just imagine what a sinless place must be like. It's overwhelming.
The analogy between paradise lost and paradise regained, and we have anything comparable to the original paradise, it'd be pretty nice, wouldn't it?
Just imagine. And I believe God in his infinite wisdom has very little to say about heaven. Why? Well, if he did, we'd all go and play marbles in the freeway, wouldn't we? Yeah, just imagine, nothing to say about it. Just a new heaven and a new earth. Remarkable.
Burning God's righteousness.
Yeah. Well, you've been pretty good, I thank you.